Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today from WILL AM 580 in beautiful, truly beautiful Urbana, Illinois, and a spectacularly lovely fall afternoon. Today we have as our guest the author of a brand new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media, by Jeff Cohn. The book has just come out. Jeff Cohn's a frequent guest on Media Matters, the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and a longtime pundit on cable television news, ranging from Fox and CNN to MSNBC. He's going to be talking about his memoirs, Cable News Confidential, today on our show. I think you're going to really enjoy it. It's a terrific book, and he is a very articulate expert on the media. But before we go to Jeff Cohn, please, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
As the FCC holds its first official hearing on its plan to revise rules regulating media ownership, many critical eyes are on the process. Some of them belong to lawyers who successfully challenged the FCC's 2003 rollback of caps on the number of newspapers, TV, and radio stations one company can own. Marvin Amori, a staff attorney with Georgetown University Law School's Institute for Public Representation, is among those watching the FCC's current proceeding. When the Third Circuit Court of Appeals reversed most of the FCC's earlier decisions on media ownership, it did so because the agency's approach to the subject had little integrity.
The commission gathered evidence but didn't really weigh it very effectively, and then the decision-making it engaged in was just not very reasoned. It didn't make sense. The commission said, we're trying to do X, and then it adopted rules that did Y. And the court looked at that and just said, you can't adopt rules in that manner.
A large part of the court's conclusion came from the fact that the FCC did not allow proper public input into the 2003 media ownership proceeding.
Usually an agency will actually put out a rule and say, here's what we're thinking of doing, public comment on it. That's not what the commission did. They said, we're thinking of changing rules, comment on it, and then later just adopted rules blindsiding the public.
Amori says FCC Chairman Kevin Martin talks a good game about wanting to hear the public's perspective on media ownership, but he might break up the process into multiple parts so as to better dilute public feedback. Recent news of the FCC suppressing studies which do not fit a policy frame that supports more media consolidation also makes Amori wonder if they'll be headed back to court again. And he does not believe that scandal has run its course.
We have a Freedom of Information Act request out right now that we filed in early August. And the FOIA request is about a study that the FCC commissioned an outside party to do. And the FCC is getting back to us on that, but we'll have some more evidence. I'm not sure it's a suppressed study, but we'll have some more evidence that the commission has. It hasn't seen the light of day when we get the information from that request.
The FCC's first official public hearing on media ownership takes place October 3rd in Los Angeles and El Segundo, California. And the first round of public comment on the FCC's media ownership proceeding is due on October 23rd. Visit stopbigmedia.com to learn more about what's at stake and how you can file your own comments to the FCC.
The massive campaign to overhaul U.S. telecommunications law has been stalled at least until after the November elections. Free Press Policy Director Ben Scott says the contentious issue of network neutrality and the fact that legislation under consideration on Capitol Hill has no meaningful provision to protect it sealed the deal, even though phone and cable companies spent well more than $100 million and worked hand-in-hand with key House and Senate members to push their agenda.
Organized people fought organized money in a battle royal and won a stalemate, which is a tremendous achievement, totally unprecedented in modern telecommunications policymaking.
However, when Congress reconvenes in a lame duck session after the elections, there's a good chance that telecom-friendly lawmakers will try to ram through policy changes as add-ons to federal spending bills. So the fight is far from over.
There's been a lot of talk about a streamlined bill, but I actually think it's going to be a giant bill that's attached to a spending package regardless of what they put on there.
In the meantime, the FCC plans to vote in October on whether or not to approve the merger of AT&T and Bell South. There's a good chance that conditions could be placed on the merger to protect network neutrality, at least in the short term. But Scott says the fate of an open internet will ultimately be decided by Congress, and citizens must remain vigilant.
The month of October is an important time for constituents to go out and talk to their legislators. I think campaign events are an ideal time to raise a question about how a particular member of Congress is going to come down on the future of the internet.
Internet policy is expected to remain a contentious issue, regardless of what happens in Congress after the elections. Scott says now is the time to think big about next year.
If we look at every moment in the history of the United States when we've had a sea change in technology or transportation, the government has been involved in the development of infrastructure, whether it was the national highway system or electrification or constructing the telephone network. When we have an essential social service that we feel every American needs to take advantage of, the government has the policies in place to bring that service and build it out.
One estimate puts the cost of wiring the entire nation with high-speed fiber optic lines at $115 billion, though that's less than half the money already spent on the occupation of Iraq.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today, October 1st, 2006, from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Our guest today, a long-awaited guest, someone I've been looking forward to getting on the air, Jeff Cohen. He's the author of a brand new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. It has a foreword by Jim Hightower. It was published by Polypoint Press and literally just off the presses. About this book, Barbara Ehrenreich writes, "With this deliciously funny expose, Jeff Cohen can probably kiss his television career goodbye. The rest of us, meanwhile, can celebrate his book and embrace him as one of America's sharpest and bravest pundits in any medium." And having read the book, I can concur, this is a terrific book and something, if you're interested in media, if you like this program, I urge you to listen to the show today, listen to what Jeff has to say, and check out this book. Jeff Cohen, welcome to Media Matters.
Great to be with you, Bob.
Well, you know, why did you decide to write the book, Jeff, and what's the book about?
Well, I was in a very unique position. There are very few media critics that get inside the media outlets that they've been condemning. So I was originally an outsider critic when I started FAIR, the Media Watch group, wrote very critically about cable news and TV news. And then when there were media controversies on TV, they would call me in and I would get on TV. And after a while, I started getting paid for being on TV. So, I wrote the book because there's very few media critics that have got such an inside look. I ended up being on Fox News every week for 5 years. I ended up being inside MSNBC during the run-up to the war in Iraq when management was basically ordering us to skew the news, to suppress viewpoints, to bias the presentation. So, I mean, the impulse to write this book had always been strong. I felt that maybe there was a career for me in TV news, but as Barbara Ehrenreich points out, there's no career after this book. But, I mean, the only reason I didn't write it as soon as I got terminated at MSNBC, because the Iraq War was coming and because Phil Donahue and I at that channel were trying to raise the questions that journalists are supposed to raise before our young men and women are sent overseas to kill or be killed. You know, I thought there might be a career left for me, and then when there wasn't one, the impulse to expose what I had seen and heard was just too great to ignore.
Our guest today in Media Matters, Jeff Cohen, founder of FAIR, television news correspondent, or pundit, I guess I should say, for 10 years for three different cable channels, joining us today live on Media Matters. And the books you've written, Jeff, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. I'm going to get that right sooner or later. Jeff, you started FAIR and worked there for a long time, as you said. And then really it was in the 1990s, and your book goes through this in the first part of the book. You started getting on at Crossfire on CNN and even auditioned for the position to be the liberal or left half of the Crossfire team. Talk a little bit about what that experience is like for you.
Well, that was eye-opening, and a good chunk of the book is on that. It's really been a concern of mine for decades and of FAIR's that both sides of the political spectrum get to be heard by the broad American people on the biggest outlets. It's always been a goal that we've worked for. And on CNN, they had by far the biggest debate show. And there might be young listeners, Bob, to your show that think the problem began with Fox News. Well, mm-hmm. The problem began way before that.
You know, you read Al Franken's book, and he talks about the debate show on Fox News, Hannity and Combs, and Combs is in such tiny letters you can hardly see the name.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that standard format of the backpedaling, barely left-of-center liberal going up against a forceful, fire-breathing right-winger, that standard TV news format was put into place, as I document in the book, by PBS and CNN. CNN had this debate show called Crossfire. A million people were watching it when I was on that show, a huge program, the biggest debate show. And for 7 years, 6 or 7 years, the person who represented the left was Michael Kinsley. And it was somewhat controversial because he would be up against real right-wingers like Buchanan and Novak and Sununu. And then when he left the show...
Now, for some of our younger listeners, who or any of our listeners who might not know who Michael Kinsley is...
Kinsley was the editor of the New Republic, a very smart, clever guy, but not at all a progressive. He was a barely left of center liberal. He was on the show up until 96, and when he leaves in 96, a reporter says, "How would you describe your politics?" And he says, "Well, I'm a wishy-washy moderate." And it's what Fair had complained about for years on PBS and CNN before there was a Fox News, that the people who represent the right are bona fide rightists. They're the kinds of people that are asked to speak at conservative political rallies and pro-life rallies and pro-gun rallies. And, and then on the left, we were represented by people who were sort of conservative Democrats. Usually they wouldn't be caught dead at a labor rally or an anti-war rally unless their limousine was caught on the wrong street, you know. So, you know, Fair used to take out full-page ads about these people. Mark Shields, who's represented the left on CNN and PBS for years, Michael Kinsley, Al Hunt was the Washington bureau chief of the Wall Street Journal. He was always representing the left against the Buchanans and the Novaks. And we used to run ads in The Nation and Mother Jones. Fair's ads would have pictures of these people, and the banner headline would be, "I'm not a leftist, but I play one on TV." So, as you say, Bob, the shock of my life, I had been a semi-regular guest on Crossfire. When Kinsley finally left, departed that seat, they tested me to be the permanent co-host of Crossfire from the left in 1996. I described that in detail, and to make a long story short, and Jim Hightower has written about this a lot himself, I didn't get the job because I ran up against that unwritten rule that if you're actually on the left, you can't represent the left every night in primetime on TV. And, you know, people ask me, what are the fears of management? Why does TV news always put up these centrists, these corporate Democrats to represent the left half of the spectrum? I learned when I was tested for the job of Crossfire that one of their main concerns was corporate sponsor flight. They were worried that I would criticize the sponsors. And when I was tested for Crossfire on the air on a real show after show, our main sponsor was General Electric, a company I'd been very critical of, and they were worried. I think that's one reason in both talk TV and talk radio that you don't see genuine progressives, you don't hear genuine progressives a lot on mainstream, like the Hightowers, like the Barbara Ehrenreichs, like the Cornel Wests, like the Bob McChesneys. You don't hear them because one reason is on commercial TV and radio, the American left is often critical of corporate power, demands corporate responsibility, and there's a concern that if they had real, bona fide, genuine people on, that the corporate sponsors would leave. And that was made explicit to me when I was tested for the job to co-host Crossfire on CNN.
Our guest today, Jeff Cohen, founder of Fair, author of the brand-new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media, a true page-turner, one of the most enjoyable reads. It's a memoir of Jeff Cohen's 10 years of working in cable television news at CNN, at Fox News, and last and not least, at MSNBC as a producer for the Donahue program in the run-up to the war, the invasion of Iraq. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Jeff Cohen to talk about the book, or really, Jeff is a frequent columnist today, writes on all current media coverage of political events and political events themselves, feel free to call him. and us here at Media Matters, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And Jeff, before we get back to the book, let me ask you about a couple of the columns you've written recently that I've read. One was the coverage of Hugo Chavez and his speech at the United Nations. Well, what's your assessment of how the media treated Hugo Chavez in the United States?
Well, I just thought there was such false finger-pointing that I couldn't remain silent, and I put out that column that went all over the Internet. I mean, there's a lot of people, including sympathizers of the process in Venezuela, where poor people are finally have a government that's providing them with programs of social uplift. You know, Venezuela is a country for 70, 80, 90 years, they've had oil wealth, and it always went to the elite. And they've repeatedly elected and reelected Hugo Chavez because he seems to be one of the first presidents that actually cares about the poor.
Actually, that point you just made seems to be lost on a lot of commentators, that he actually, there's a constitutional system, he was elected, political dissidents are not in jail, it is not a police state.
Right, I was there in June.
And Thomas Friedman recently, just in the last week in a column, called him a dictator.
Bob, he's the first dictator in the history of the world that has the media largely in the hands of his political opposition. There's no dictatorship in history that has allowed the media to be in the hands of the people that are trying to get you out of office. I found the coverage appalling, but especially I wrote that column about the finger pointers. I mean, you had Rush Limbaugh. He was not only spewing about Chavez on his radio show. If you watch cable news, they were all referring to and running the tape of Limbaugh spewing at Chavez for calling someone a devil. And it didn't take a lot of research to dig up the fact that that's what Limbaugh does on his own show. He's repeatedly calling Democrats. You know, for months on end, he called Tom Daschle the devil. It was a going line on his book that Daschle was El Diablo. And they would play Devil, you know, in a Blue Dress song. And it went on and on about how he's Satan in disguise. Well, obviously, Chavez was being tongue-in-cheek at the UN and Limbaugh. But for a guy like Limbaugh to be getting all this play, and the other spewers, the Hannitys, these people that I've debated year after year on TV news, these people, that's what they do is name call. They talk about the evil doers all the time and the defenders of evil and the... And Limbaugh, literally, Daschle and the Democrats doing the work of the devil. It just struck me as such obvious hypocrisy. And they were getting away with it, as they usually do, because in the book I just talk about how corporate media tilts toward the right, caters to the right, caters to the Falwells and the Coulters and the Limbaughs. And that's what these people do, is name call.
Speaking of name calling, you talk in the book about Ann Coulter. And she's obviously sort of a fiery personality and one who gets everyone's attention. But, you know, when you look at some of the stuff she says, it seems by Hugo Chavez's standards to be extremely mild. What was your experience with Ann Coulter?
I wish I could describe a lengthy experience without Ann Coulter, but unlike most of the right-wingers in American TV, she's one I never debated. And the reason is she refused to debate me. And, you know, I tell the story in humorous detail. It was angering at the time. You know, the good news about the book is I've mellowed a little and I can make this stuff funny. But I was a regular paid pundit, full-time staffer at MSNBC in 2002. I debated a different right-winger every night in a regular slot, every afternoon, I should say. And I was scheduled to debate Ann Coulter about her new book, Slander. It was arranged 7, 8, 9 days in advance. And I had to read that book. I deserve combat pay for having read chunks of that book. And then I'm in makeup. I got the earpiece. I'm walking to my position where, as I say, I'm a regular paid pundit with a regular time slot. And I hear in my earpiece from my producer, she won't debate you. I said, well, that's fine. I'm ready to debate. Tell her I'm going to go without her. I'm ready. No, she won't debate you. And here I was a staffer. Ann Coulter was an invited guest. And I was ready to debate the contents of a controversial book, but the invited guest, the author of that controversial book, wouldn't debate. So what happened? I got taken off the air. Ann Coulter went on alone with a anchor person who was completely unprepared to ask anything tough. And to me, that incident, and there's you know, a dozen or two different incidents, that incident and these dozen or two others say more about the myth of a liberal media than 30 books could tell you. Because if you let, I mean, the television news just panders to these people. The right thing to do in that position, if journalism were being practiced in TV news, the producer would have said, I got to tell you something, Ann. This debate was prepared. If you're unwilling to debate, you wrote the book. If you're unwilling to debate, we're going to interview Jeff Cohen, who has read this book and has questions to ask, and we're going to debate him alone, and he's going to talk about what's wrong with your book. But, of course, that's not what happened. I was the staff member silenced. She went on the air, and she had a puffball interview, and she can complain and does about the liberal media, but if it weren't for TV news, there'd be no Ann Coulter.
Our guest, Jeff Cohen, author of the brand-new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters on WILL AM 580. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Jeff Cohen, the phone number here, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Jeff Cohen, in addition to starting the Media Watch Group Fair 20 years ago now in New York City and working for Fair as its executive director for over a decade, went on as a pundit to work for CNN, for Fox News Channel, and finally for MSNBC. And after a decade of working in the pundit business, Jeff Cohen has written this book, Cable News Confidential, which, as Barbara Ehrenreich says, as a result, he can probably kiss his television career goodbye. And Jeff, you know, you worked for the big three, I guess they are, of cable television news now. Did you notice fundamental differences between the cultures of the three, or are they pretty much same style?
They're closer than you would think. I mean, at CNN and MSNBC, I found the same overriding fear in the management level, and it was imparted to me directly by managers. And I would say the number one fear is the fear of doing anything that could get you or your channel accused of being liberal.
Really? The number one fear of producers and
well, especially
managers.
The top. I'm talking about top management, executive producers, presidents of the channels. They're just constantly worried. That's why the Buchanans and the Novaks and the Coulters and the Falwells have proliferated on cable news, but genuine progressives don't. They're always worried about polarizing too much with the Republicans. If you remember when Walter Isaacson became the head of CNN in 2001, the first thing he did was go to Capitol Hill and ask the Republicans what their beefs are with CNN and how can he make them more happy. I mean, I describe in the book numbers of these examples where the natural bent of a cable news executive is to genuflect to the right. And so at CNN and MSNBC, I found a similar ambiance, a fear of doing anything that's too independent, too oppositional, too journalistic. Fox News is a league of its own, as you know.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Fox News at some length in the show. But let me ask you this. Do you think that if both houses of Congress and the presidency were controlled by a liberal Democrat and liberal Democrats, that the management of these stations would flip over and become much more pro-Democrat? Or do you think it's a different phenomenon than simply kowtowing to the party in power?
I think it's different. I think that, you know, we didn't have a liberal president in Bill Clinton, but we had a Democrat. And we didn't have a liberal Democratic leadership in both the House and Senate in 93-94, but we had a Democratic leadership. And during that time, Fair would do studies of who got to appear on big mainstream TV and mainstream radio. And in fact, there was a famous study that Fair did of NPR. And in NPR, there were more Republicans appearing on the air during those years that the Democrats had the White House, the House of Representatives, and the U.S. Senate. There were more Republicans on than Democrats. And then Fair did a survey after the Republicans took power about a decade later, and when Fair of NPR, and when Fair put on its survey of which experts were quoted and which advocates were quoted on NPR and which weren't, NPR's initial response was, well, of course there's more Republicans on the Republicans control the levers of power. And Fair's immediate response was, well, how do you explain it that the Republicans were also majority on your waves when the Democrats had the White House, House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate in 93, 94. So it's my belief that things will change a little bit, but it won't be a huge change. Murdoch is a right-winger who owns Fox News. Does he hate all Democrats? No. He just did a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. He likes conservative-leaning, corporate-leaning Democrats. But clearly, he's got a bias. Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, has a bias, and everyone knows the bias. At MSNBC, the owner is General Electric. I know the management there. They're either hardcore centrists or... And those hardcore centrists usually lean right because they know that's safer for their careers at GE. And at CNN, you've got Time Warner is the owner, and you have a political culture there where I think they're all thrilled that Ted Turner's gone. And there's like a political culture of just, you know, you put your spectrum. In the American public, there's a broad spectrum. And the center of the American public spectrum is way to the left of their spectrum because they're in a beltway spectrum. They're in a Georgetown cocktail party spectrum. So when these people in management, and I've seen them, that they're just their absolute compulsion is to place themselves in the center. It's not the center of American politics. It's the center of a spectrum in the beltway, which goes from GE to GM. So, no.
Does that make it like GK or GM?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, yes, there will be some change if the liberal Democrat becomes the president and liberals run the House and the Senate, but it will not be a great change.
Our guest, Jeff Cohn, author of the new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. The book has just come out. It is... memoirs of his experience over the last 10 years, highly entertaining and engaging. Our number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. We have a few callers who've been waiting patiently. Line one, you're on the air with Jeff Cohn.
Bob, thanks for yet another great guest and great show.
My pleasure.
Mr. Cohn, I'm curious about Mark Shields and if there are people on the left who... you know, buttonhole him and say, look, get a little further to the left in your perspective when you're debating David Brooks.
Well, I mean, the problem is that he is what he is. And the problem I have is it has never been with Mark Shields. He's a clever guy. He's a very articulate guy and a very well-spoken guy. My problem is the management that puts him in a position that he's ill-equipped for. The quote in the book that everyone is laughing about is I describe Mark Shields as, you know, clever and smart and glib, but he's no more an advocate for the American left than Mel Gibson is an advocate for Reform Judaism. And, you know, I just think that, when Shields first started representing the left on CNN and on PBS decades ago, Fair like asked to get his promotional literature to see how does he describe himself, and the promotional literature said that Mark Shields doesn't lean in either direction. Well, that's almost the definition of a centrist. Fine, there's a lot of room for centrists on American TV. Some of my best friends are centrists, but they shouldn't be in the seats where they're the ones taking on the Brookses and the Novaks and the Buchanans, and that's the seat that corporate media managers put them in. And again, the blame goes to the corporate managers. They know exactly what they're doing when they choose to have the American left represented by Alan Combs and Mark Shields rather than by Barbara Ehrenreich and Jim Hightower. It's by design. It's not a mistake.
Jeff Cohn, which conservative pundits or columnists in the United States today who are prominent do you have the most respect for?
I've got to be honest that, you know, I know a lot of them, and I know some of them well, and I've met their spouses and stuff, and that's what happens when you get into TV news in the position where I was, where I rarely appeared on TV, where I wasn't with at least one fire-breathing right-winger on my shoulder. So I've gotten to know a lot of these folks. I must say that I had a little bit of respect for a lot of them, a number of them, until the Iraq War. And then, I mean, people, they made such far-fetched statements, and were so vicious in attacking people that were skeptical, people who said before the Iraq War, you know, this is, you're going to destabilize an already unstable region. This is going to be a quagmire. By the way, those are words I used on the air, which is probably why I'm no longer on the air. And when I saw a lot of these people, like I used to have respect for Rich Lowry. And, you know, he's a character in my book. He's the young editor of the National Review, one of the leading magazines of conservatism for decades in our country, the magazine started by Bill Buckley. And Lowry, I've got him in here. I didn't mean to lampoon him or ridicule him, but it comes across as ridicule. The stuff he said about the Iraq War was insane. Now, to his credit, he's now speaking a little more soberly. There's another conservative I used to appear on every week on Fox News was Jim Pinkerton. And Pinkerton was skeptical about the war, said so, and sometimes you read Pinkerton's columns. He's often a very extremist on TV, but you read Jim Pinkerton's columns. He's a pretty hardcore conservative. And his columns make a lot of sense because the war did shake him, and preemption shook him, and the neoconservative foreign policy shook him. So every so often you come across conservatives that have allowed reality to change their what they say. But the fact is that the people who run the media, they want the conservatives that don't apologize for anything. And they don't ask conservatives to apologize for the ridiculous factual statements that were uttered by them. And, you know, I say about these TV experts and pundits, you know, getting it completely wrong on TV means never having to say you're sorry. I document in the book how expert after expert was put up there to talk about the weapons of mass destruction without debate. Those people never had to be balanced. I couldn't discuss the weather on MSNBC without being balanced by at least one right-winger. But when I got pulled off the air in October 2002, months before the Iraq War started, I was replaced in my time slot by all these military analysts and weapons experts. Virtually every word they said was false. Those people suffered any sanction? No. They're still on there. They're still the military analyst. The leading expert on MSNBC is General Barry McCaffrey. If they were practicing journalism at NBC and MSNBC, where McCaffrey remains their star military analyst, he'd be off the air because he got such a huge, huge story so totally, totally wrong. But that doesn't faze him. He's on the air. It's Phil Donahue and myself and people like us that have been kicked off the air.
Our guest, Jeff Cohen, today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Jeff Cohen's new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media, will be one of the premiums we'll be offering 3 weeks from today in our fall pledge drive. So if you can wait 3 weeks, you can get it then or go out and get it now. But it will be available in 3 weeks. And thanks to Jeff and his publisher for being very generous and helping us with that. The number here at Media Matters, if you'd like to talk to Jeff Cohen, 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about why, Jeff, you think that progressive organizations aren't more aggressive at taking over big media. I'm thinking a couple months ago the Philadelphia Inquirer was up for sale, and the CWA took whose members, you know, who represents people that work there, tried to get into the bidding. And one might have thought that, like, you know, the whole progressive movement in the United States would have joined the fray, the AFL-CIO, National Organization for Women, because obviously you need a lot of money to pull this off. But it seemed like besides CWA, like, you know, they were all alone and nobody kind of joined in to help them. And there are people in this country with progressive values that have a lot of money. And so I was just surprised by that. I wanted your... And also the idea, you know, it wouldn't be to take it over and make it a left-wing rag. It would be to take it over and make it a real newspaper that did real journalism, you know, as it already does some, you know, so sort of like, you know, protect it.
Every word you said and said so articulately is words that I've said to people who have money. It's something I've been talking about for decades. You've got to buy a piece of the rock. And the key isn't to turn it into a left-wing mirror image of Ann Coulter. That would be disgusting. But to have a place where journalists can actually dig up the stories and where you have a balance of views that includes the actual genuine progressive half of the country. So, I was disappointed that a better fight wasn't put up by CWA Newspaper Guild or that they got more allies involved. But give them credit for trying. It's a sad thing for me that, you know, you hear, and I don't want to criticize anyone as an individual, because Barbara Streisand is an example of someone who's been concerned about it for years. I'd love to see her, and she's been, I should say, a supporter of FAIR and other worthy causes. There are people that understand the media problem, that watch cable news and get indigestion, who have money or are leaders of organizations. And I really think that a lot of the money that needs to be spent, instead of often giving it to Democratic candidates that aren't worthy, would be to buy a piece of the rock and try to change the political discourse. I know what's happening, and in the epilogue of my book, and by the way, while it's a very funny book in lampooning the corporate media, it ends on a very optimistic note, which is the independent media are booming, and people have tried to buy a piece of the rock. I mean, there was an effort to do talk radio. It's ongoing with Air America. They've made an awful lot of mistakes.
Yeah, let me take a second, Jeff Cohn, if you will, and just talk a little bit more about that. Many of our listeners are interested in Air America and how it's fared. What's your assessment of Air America?
Well, Air America has made a number of financial missteps. They've misspent money. The contracts were bad. They spent money too fast. There was a movie on HBO that described some of the screw-ups at the beginning, before Air America even went on the air. So there's been some financial missteps. I believe that the content of Air America, the news, could be doing so much more than it does. The talk show hosts, some of them are great, but some of them, I just think there's too much emphasis on rant, and there's just too much repetition rather than reason. I think there's a lot of people that middle-of-the-road people, I know they're playing to their base. There's, you know, liberals and progressives never had anyone to listen to on talk radio. But I think content-wise, Air America should be a little better than it is. But it's largely, I believe, because of the financial missteps that they are now in financial trouble. It's obvious that there was a big audience out there. And, you know, even Clear Channel stations that were underperforming in some markets were hungry to pick up the Air America programming, and then their ratings soared. So I think while it proved that there's an audience out there, I think they've made some internal decisions that were major errors that have caused them to be struggling. But I agree with this caller that it would be really refreshing to have a newspaper or a TV news outlet that really reported the news. And when they had debates, it wasn't the pseudo-debate between Hannity and Combs or Pat Buchanan and Mike Kinsley or Mark Shields, but real debates with real experts and real advocates. And if the experts get things wrong year after year about foreign policy, you don't bother with them anymore. You get experts who get things right.
Jeff, let me interrupt you for a second. We have a full bank of callers, and I'm going to get them, but I want to follow up one point on this issue you're raising right now, because it's clearly something you've thought about a lot. Do you think it would be a better use of wealthy liberal or progressive money to spend a fortune buying radio and TV stations to set up this network, or buying daily newspapers, or take the same amount of money and plug it into just hiring great journalists and paying for plant and equipment and producing just kick butt stuff on the internet website and getting more bang for your buck that way? What would be where would you lean?
I'd like to see both. I mean, the epilogue of the book describes how if it weren't for the internet, there'd be, you know, progressives wouldn't even be in the battle. I mean, I describe in the internet, and I've been doing this now, you know, I've been on tour this last week, and that's all people want to talk about. I mean, on the internet, progressives, obviously conservatives dominate talk TV and talk radio, but progressives have taken to this medium of the internet because it's a small d democratic medium. It's a medium where you debate. If you attack something, you put the link to the article or TV news clip you're attacking. It's so different than how the Limbaughs and the O'Reillys and the right-wing bullies who dominate talk TV and talk radio operate. And it's no mistake that progressives have taken to a medium like this because they believe in debate. And I'm talking about independent thinkers and independent moderates. And that's why, I mean, progressives and independents have raised so much more money on the internet than conservatives. They've disseminated so much more information on it than conservatives. But there's a lot of hybrids, Bob, that, you know, where you have a major website getting big traffic and you start doing video. And I see the future is going to be these hybrids. But I, I believe that, you know, in the back of the book, I describe an approach from Paul Jay, who used to be at CBC, Canadian Broadcast Company, where he's trying to use a model of a TV network that would also be web-based, but would also be on digital cable and would be on satellite. And the model for how to run that, how to fundraise for that, is the Howard Dean MoveOn.org model, where instead of having corporate sponsors who may be the reason you don't give the full spectrum of views, instead of having corporate owners telling you to tone down, which is what MSNBC's management kept telling Phil Donahue in the run-up to the war, you have a TV and web operation where the journalists aren't told to tone down because all of the money comes from thousands of people giving $50. That project is called The Real News. I describe it at the back of the book. I know, Bob, that you're supportive of it. I've been supportive of it. And, I mean, I think we can do both. I would like to buy some TV and radio space, and especially radio stations in key swing states. I would like to, I think there's enough money among unions and progressive individuals to buy some strategically placed radio stations, and that way you don't have to beg Clear Channel to put your liberal hosts on the air.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Jeff Cohen, author of the new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. We have a full bank of callers for Jeff Cohen. Let's get right back to them now to make sure everyone gets heard. Line 3, Champagne, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. With respect to television, it seems like these days the only place you can get any kind of progressive analysis or news, with the exception of Democracy Now!, which is run on a few stations, is relegated to comedy programs. And specifically, I was wondering if FAIR has done an analysis of the guest and the programming on Bill Maher's Real Time. I've noticed that Ann Coulter has been on there several times. If you were on, I've missed that show. And Bill Maher, just my own bias, I mean, he ranges from sometimes brilliantly on point to just boneheaded as well. But I just wondered, have you done?
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, your description of Bill Maher is similar to my observations. He can be so right and so funny and so insightful and so wrong. But I love Bill Maher because, you know, he's an independent voice. And you don't have to agree with me on every issue for me to like what you do. And I've appreciated Maher. What I never liked is the guest list. And I don't watch Real Time. That's the HBO show. But we used to do observations on and criticism of the ABC show Politically Incorrect, and it was not an accident that right-wingers were so prominent and progressive advocates were virtually invisible. That was what they wanted. There was an article in Time magazine about Bill Maher where they were quoted that on every show we say, okay, who's our right-winger, and okay, well, who are we going to get from Hollywood, and it was never ever a sense of, you know, boy, this would be a good place to put some clever-sounding progressives as well. And, you know, I think part of it is Maher would sometimes polarize with the right wing, but on some foreign policy issues, he would agree with the right winger. So, I mean, they set up a guest list that was biased, that it needed a right winger, usually a humorless one. And so I assume some of that has followed them to HBO, but I've watched the HBO show maybe 5 or 7 times, and I find it's not as bad as Politically Incorrect in that guest list thing. And I love Bill Maher, you know, the new rules stuff. When Bill Maher is on, even when I think he's wrong, he's still often funny. But I think you've hit the nail on the head. What does it say about TV news in our country that the two best, most important shows about news and politics are on the comedy channel, Colbert Report and The Daily Show?
You know,
without doubt, they're the best shows.
Yeah, Jeff, on that point, I remember a famous comment Ralph Nader made where he said that people were applauding the Comedy Central and Bill Maher at one time, and he said, you know, that's actually nothing to be too proud of, because the only other country he saw where that was true was the old Soviet Union, where all the interesting political coverage was all sort of comedy work, because you couldn't do anything in the official media, were so terrible.
That's right. In totalitarian countries, it's only like artists and theater and
some comics and who can push the envelope. It's a complete indictment of TV news. I mean, I look at the staff, what the staff is turning out each night on the Comedy Channel with Jon Stewart and with Steve Colbert, and the insight that they bring on what's wrong with politics and what's wrong with media. And then you turn over to CNN or ABC News or MSNBC. It's a joke. And it really says something that you have to be in the format of comedy or entertainment to really shed a bright light on what's wrong with some of the major power institutions in our society, because the journalists who work for the big corporate media just aren't getting the job done.
Our guest today at Media Matters, Jeff Cohen, author of the new book, Cable News Confidential, My Misadventures in Corporate Media. We do have a couple of phone lines open if you'd like to call in at 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Speaking of which, let's go to our toll-free number now. Line 4, Fryna, you're on the air with Jeff Cohen.
Hi, Mr. Cohen. Thanks so much for your great, great work. I'm reading the looking through the Constitution, I'm noticing in the Bill of Rights that it's specifically, when it says the rights of the individuals, it'll say no person shall be denied, for instance, and it doesn't say no citizen. And in the lead-up to the Constitution, the spirit it's based on, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And so isn't it when they vote on these laws in the Congress claiming that it's not against the Constitution because these are non-citizens, so we can torture them, for instance, isn't that completely against the Constitution? Isn't it? Shouldn't they be called to task for this by the media? What's your opinion on
that? I think you've raised a good point that the Constitution talks about no person shall be denied, and it's, I mean, you know, if you arrest someone here, they have the same right. You don't check, well, are you from Mexico before I read you the Miranda rights. Let's face it, the Bush administration has been chipping away at those noble documents, and I think one reason he can get away with it and the administration can get away with it is because of mainstream journalism. And I met so many good people in TV news, but they were usually at the lower levels, often young journalists, aggressive, energetic, but ultimately powerless. And when there's a national crisis or there's a war on terror or there's a war in Iraq coming, then these people who are good journalists are even more powerless than normal. So, I mean, to the degree that that Bush is chipping away at vital constitutional freedoms and these signing things that he does where he sort of changes the law even in the signing, and the executive, the just outlandish increase in executive power and taking it and trying to minimize our checks and balances, it's really sort of a scary environment. But especially in the first 5 years of the Bush administration, the bigger the corporate journalist, the bigger the news outlet, it seemed like almost the less they said. And there's nothing more humiliating, I think, for someone who's a good journalist at the New York Times or the Washington Post, and there are so many good journalists, to look at what those two newspapers, which are considered the quality newspapers, what did they do during the run-up to the Iraq War? So it's not just TV news. This administration had much of journalism intimidated. Much of corporate journalism has a lot to apologize for in the areas of foreign policy and in the areas of constitutional liberties.
Jeff, we've got a full bank of callers. I'm going to try to get to all of them, but just briefly as a quick follow-up to the point you just made, you know, you talk a lot about the build-up to the war in Iraq, the invasion, and the terrible press coverage, which now I think is universally accepted. Have the press learned from their mistakes, and do you think the coverage of what's going on in Iraq in the past 6 months and currently is doing a much better job?
It's not much better, but there's certainly more coverage in the last 6 months that Iraq is an unmitigated disaster, that Iraq is, you know, that we've created by that invasion a destabilized situation of complete terror for the people of Iraq. And I think that it's sort of hard to deny that reality now. What's more interesting to me, Bob, is Iran. where you're finding the same experts. Frank Gaffney, he's a character in my book. I had to debate him on MSNBC where he said Saddam Hussein, in the run-up to the war in Iraq, Saddam Hussein isn't just to blame for 9/11. Saddam Hussein was behind Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing. I'm not kidding. And now Gaffney's on the air. Again, being a right-winger, saying outlandish things, getting all of the facts wrong, does not mean you will ever lose your seat on TV. If you're an independent progressive who gets your facts right, well, there's a good chance you're out of the air, you're off the air, you were never brought in. But so when I look at the coverage of Iran, that's what's concerning me, that you have them saying things that are clearly not true about Iran and Iran's weapons program. There's no debate. They bring on the same experts that were wrong about Iraq's weapons programs, who now may well be wrong about Iran's weapon program and are never in a debate. So I'm seeing the same pattern with regard to the war drums beating, or at least the military attack drums beating on Iran. And the funniest guy on TV now is Glenn Beck. He's a guy, I don't know if people have seen him, he's on CNN Headline News in prime time, and he does show after show basically calling for a military attack on Iran. He's a talk radio windbag who, you know, called Cindy Sheehan a prostitute, wished that Denis Kucinich had died. This is the kind of, you know, the vicious hate that the guy spewed on radio, and CNN gave him an hour-long show. I wonder why they won't do that for Jim Hightower or Ralph Nader or Barbara Ehrenreich. You know, we got some very entertaining, not necessarily Ralph, but Jim Hightower and Barbara Ehrenreich, and even Ralph can sometimes be entertaining. There's so many entertaining progressive advocates. Isn't it funny that CNN has never given them an hour-long show like they just gave this hater, Glenn Beck, who knows nothing about foreign policy and is trying to goad Bush into an attack on Iran every night?
Our guest, Jeff Cohn, we've only got a few minutes left. Let's get back to the phone lines. Line 2, cell phone heading toward Chicago. Are you still in our range? Line 2? I think we lost our cell phone heading to Chicago, so let's go to the next caller that we have queued up. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with Jeff Cohn.
Hi there.
Hi.
I consider myself a relatively critical media consumer. I mean, I listen to this show, for example. I hardly ever watch TV. I know a lot of other people who are in a similar political situation. They also hardly ever watch TV. My question is, are the companies that are providing the ad funding for many of these programs that where they feel that they will lose, they put pressure on the show not to air certain viewpoints. Do they do that simply because the viewership is skewed to the right, or is it not skewed to the right? That's the question.
Well, the viewership gets skewed to the right over a period of time if the programming they put on is skewed to the right. And clearly at Fox News, you know, I appeared there every week for 5 years, the viewership is skewed to the right. And that's because of the content. Nevertheless, there were still, you know, I still had an audience of progressives. I don't know if it was 10% or 15% or independent thinkers, and it made it worthwhile for me to go to work every weekend. So, but in terms of, it's very subtle. I'm not saying that the sponsors are going into cable news executives and saying, here's the people we want you to have on, but you can't have these people on. I'm saying the decisions are made by the corporate management to avoid these problems in the first place. And they know that if they have Alan Colmes representing the left, if they have Michael Kinsley representing the left, that there's never going to have a problem with corporate flight, sponsor flight. So it's something that they're just wary of genuine progressives, and the self-censorship happens ahead of time.
Jeff Cohn, we have a couple callers patiently waiting. Let's get back to the phone lines now. Line 4, another cell phone on the way up I-57. Are you still with us?
I hope so.
Okay, you've got Jeff Cohn.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, pull off the highway. Pull off the highway so we don't lose you, too.
I think I'll be okay.
Okay.
But as a charter subscriber to Extra, this is a real pleasure.
Thank you.
My question is, I'm a candidate for public office, and I recently, in an interview, was asked, how do you account for the shift of working people to the right, where they're voting on the basis of social issues like abortion and, you know, gay marriage and so on? And I talked. My response was, well, you know, look at what they're getting a barrage of right-wing propaganda from the media. And I also cited to the excellent book, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Sure.
I'm assuming you may be familiar with that, and how they, you know, the right kind of has associated the ruling class in this country with the liberal elite and not corporate America. And we got in this long argument about it because his response was, well, you know, aren't you being presumptuous and arrogant saying that? Because how do you know that working people really don't care more about abortion and gay rights, you know, gay marriage and things like that? Maybe this is really what's important to them, and that's why these radio shows and TV shows are so popular with that crowd. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's your take on this? How would you have responded to the same question?
Yeah, I think you make some very good points. The idea that all the people care about is gay rights and abortion is just, it's not borne out by anything scientific or any polls. The reality is that there are certain issues that are debated over and over in American media, especially gender issues, sex-related issues, and there are certain issues that are almost off-limits in the American media, and I assume those are the issues you would want to talk to your constituents about. So you're operating in an unlevel playing field, an unlevel media playing field, because issues like trade, there is no debate, and that's a winning issue for progressive candidates, is the trade pacts that are so corporate-oriented and so unfriendly to American working people and middle-class people and the environment. There's issues of corporate welfare and corporate power that can't be debated on Fox News or MSNBC or CNN. So there's, I mean, you are operating in a media playing field where there's never a worry at CNN or MSNBC or Fox News if they do another debate about abortion or another debate about gay rights or another debate about affirmative action. No sponsor's going to leave. No one's going to say, oh, you've ruffled my feathers. That debate is almost old hat. But if they have debates of the kind that the author, Thomas Frank, of What's the Matter with Kansas, wants to hear, which is debates about who has power in this country, who pays taxes in this country, where does the tax money go to in this country? If you think middle-class people only care about gay rights and abortion, I'd love to see your data. And that's what I would have told this media person, because the American people are getting squeezed economically. They're concerned about education and environment. And, you know, I wish we had more time because it's something I do a lot of speaking about.
I know. It's an issue that's near and dear to your heart. And I think you discuss it to some extent in Cable News Confidential. It comes through those issues. We have time for one final caller, just a minute or so at most. Fryna, line 3, you're on the air. If you can be brief, please, it'd be appreciated.
Thanks a lot. Are you, as a media progressive, afraid of being accused of helping the terrorists and being renditioned? Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I by the way, I hope people will go into this book because every single question that has been asked is in the book. But yeah, I would say things when I was on the air before the war in Iraq, and I would say, how does the invasion of Iraq deal with the al-Qaeda terrorists, these religious fanatics that attacked us on September 11th? And what I would always hear is, have you forgotten that 3,000 people have died, Jeff? And like every debate, anytime people would say before the war, why are we attacking Iraq? Have you forgotten that 3,000 people have died? And it was that kind of media mantra that was, in many ways, you know, I was obviously fighting it, but
hey,
I
Jeff
was an
Cohen,
exception.
Jeff, unfortunately, on that note, we're going to have people turn to your book, Cable News Confidential, to get the completion of the point you're making, because our time is at an end here at Media Matters. So I want to thank you, Jeff Cohen, for being our guest today, for generously sharing an hour with us, talking about your new book, Cable News Confidential. My name's Bob McChesney. I'm going to be back in 167 hours with John Nichols for a special presentation, Not Pledge Drive, John Nichols. And I want to thank John Anderson for being my producer. See you next week.